Welcome to the Go Hack Something podcast, where education and technology meet. On today's episode, we're going to talk about our gaming boot camp recap, how it went this summer, what the kids learned, and what parent feedback we received. I'm your host, Will Bushy, author of Wired for Coding, and my co-host, Ross Wickman, is out on assignment again this week, but we'll catch up with him here in a couple of weeks. I know he's been super busy. So before we jump into today's topic, I wanted to talk about a different event that we host, and we've been doing this for a few years as well, and it's a real interesting project, and it dovetails very nicely into our Gaming Bootcamp recap episode. So about 4 years ago, I ran into somebody that was interested in taking our Gaming Bootcamp out on the Native American reservations around the state of South Dakota. And at the time, we just had an idea. We didn't have any funding or even an instructor for that matter. And we got to talking about it and thought it was a great idea, but we had to get some sponsorship in order to support it. Well, then coincidentally, a few months later, I ran into somebody at AT&T who's the president of the Northern Plains region. And I was explaining to her about some of the projects that I do and some of the gaming boot camps that we had been doing at the time around the state, and mentioned that we were looking for a sponsor to do our Native American outreach. And she thought that was a great idea. And AT&T's got a great reputation of supporting STEM-based programs, especially in the rural communities. And so we got to talking to her a little bit, and she had some funding through one of her sponsorship arms. And sure enough, she agreed that she'd like to fund it, and she was able to get those funds secured and routed over to us during that same year. So that allowed us to start the very first Native American gaming boot camp. Now, the reason for the sponsorship is so that we could afford to pay an instructor, travel out to the Native community, and then offer this camp completely free of charge. Now, it may sound like it wouldn't be that difficult, but it is extremely difficult to work out in some of these communities. In some cases, they don't have computers. In general, they've got a place that we can host them. Food can be a real issue. How do we get the kids fed? Because if they're going to be with us for most of the day, we usually do between five and six hours. We need to have snacks. We need to have lunch provided for them, beverages. And the other big, big challenge is just transportation of the kids. And we've solved that in a couple of different ways in some of these communities. But it's a lot more difficult to host one of these Native American camps than it is for one of our camps here that we host here in Sioux Falls. But over the years, we've hosted a number of them. This summer is going to be probably our biggest summer of all. We have six camps planned around the state of South Dakota. We've got a few of them in Sioux Falls, and then we also have one in Chamberlain and Mission, and then we've got a couple that we've got them booked, but we just don't have them confirmed yet. And that's the other thing, is it does seem to, the planning too far ahead sometimes is counterproductive on some of these events that we run. So a lot of them end up getting booked and scheduled just a week or two in advance. So we have to stay a little bit mobile, and we have to be prepared to just head out of town and host these camps. Now, these camps do vary a little bit from our 5-day camps that we run in Sioux Falls that I'm going to talk about today. These camps tend to be 3 days, and we usually go from either 9 or 10 to 3 in the afternoon. So they do tend to be 5 or 6 hours. They're just a little bit shorter than our regular camps. But the other interesting thing that we do as part of the Native American camps is our instructors, Bobby Johnson, who is a Native American himself, brings a lot of the culture and the community into the programs. So even though our regular gaming boot camps, we might do 7 or 8 games over a 5-day period, the Native American camps tend to run 3 games or maybe 4 games during a 3-day period, but they'd spend a lot of time talking about the culture and bringing these kids into that culture. And it's just really fun to see. It's great to have that very significant impact on these young kids' lives. So anyway, that's a program that we're real proud of. And like I mentioned earlier, right now it's entirely funded by some grants from AT&T. We would love to have more sponsors on board that would allow us to expand out and do some additional programming, maybe even throughout the year instead of just during the summer. This year was the first year we bought some laptops. Now we're going to be a lot more mobile. In previous years, we were a little bit more constrained on needing to find locations that had laptops or computers, or at least had some of them. We always had a few that we can use. But now that we've got 10 computers, 10 laptops, we can be extremely mobile. And since we own them, we can just go anywhere where we need to go. The curriculum that we've built doesn't require internet access, although it's much more convenient if the kids can jump online and grab a different image if they would like. But anyway, that's one of our programs that we run that's been a lot of fun to host over the years. So now if we switch over and talk about today's main topic, which is our summer gaming boot camp that we host. This is our fourth year of running that camp. And what it is it's a five-day gaming boot camp where we go from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and then Friday we do 9 to 1. And we have a showcase at the very end, which I'll talk about here in a minute. Now, our camps do tend to be very, very deep into the technology. It's not a, hey, go play video games for 6 hours a day. We still keep the camps fun, but I really want the kids to learn and understand how to build video games. I want them to start to get that exposure to technology. I want them to understand what it means to build programming logic, how animations work, how sprites work, how physics engines work, kind of that whole breadth of, hey, this is when you're done, you have all of the skills to go build your own video game from scratch. And so that's where we really focus. And there's a lot of other camps that are what I would consider a little bit more high level or even superficial from a programming standpoint. I, with 20 plus years of experience, well, let's just say 10 years of experience, I'm not that old, have built out all of the curriculum. And I'm very interested in putting the curriculum together in a way that the kids thoroughly understand what it is that they're doing. I don't do a lot of kind of tricks or things that are either over their head or just way under their skill set. And we try to nail that middle ground where they have enough skills to follow along and build the games, but then also build their own games. And we've seen a lot of kids build their own games after the camp. And even during the camp, we do too. So this summer, we're hosting three of these five-day camps. Now, that is down a few from the last couple of years, and there's a couple of reasons why we decided to do that. Last year, I ran, there was actually they were almost all 5 days, a couple were three, but there were six that we ran, which is twice as many we did this year. And I did have two instructors, but what happened was that we were spread out throughout the whole summer, and we were spread out throughout the entire state. We were in Pierce, South Dakota, and we spent 2 weeks up in Brookings. And it was a lot of fun to do, and we got to expand out and meet some of the local communities. But it was just such a huge organizational challenge and expense to go out and do these on-site. This year, I really wasn't interested in spending that much time on the logistics. I wanted to focus on the games, and I want to focus on some of these other projects that I've been doing, like Hack Sioux Falls. So this year, I kind of scaled that back a little bit, and we're just going to do the three. We actually just finished the last one up a couple of weeks ago. We did schedule them all towards the beginning of summer, which worked for some parents, but didn't work for some other kids if they had some early vacations planned. And we might sneak another one in later this summer before school starts. But as of right now, we just have the three. And we did about 35 kids this summer. And we had what I call mentors. We had four mentors or helpers that came out and worked with us. And those mentors were previous students that have gotten a little bit older over the years, are very comfortable with the platform. And they just come out and help make sure the kids follow along. If they get stuck, they can help them get unstuck. Or in some cases, the kids want to go and explore something a little bit different than what we're covering, and they can help out with that as well. So this year, we built seven games, and it did vary ever so slightly on the games based on the week that we were doing. You kind of have to play the room and see how the kids are responding. One of the 3 weeks was kids that were just slightly younger, so we didn't quite go as fast as the other two. But in all cases, we built between six and seven complete video games from scratch during this 5 days. Now, most of these games that we build allow the kids to explore and create their own variations. We don't have them follow the steps exactly as the instructions are written out. If they want to add their own images, they can, or put their own logic in. We always have a lot of kids that want to explore and do their own thing, like figure out how to add music or how to add sound effects or how to add multiple levels or a start screen or a splash screen. And we encourage them to do that as part of our curriculum, we have very designated time where we're learning and we're building as a group. And then we'll go into other periods where we might have 15 to 30 minutes where the kids can either get caught up on the game that they're building by adding their own levels or start to explore their own video games. And that's really the point in time where we see a lot more of that creativity. There'll always be a handful of the kids that get together. And again, most of these kids don't know each other before the camp, and they'll form some interesting friendships, and they'll want to build their own video game during that downtime. And a lot of times, and this year, it was no different. We had some of the kids that got together in the evenings before or between the classes and were building video games. In fact, this year I had a kid on, I think it was the second day, bring in an Xbox controller, and he wanted to know if we could use that game or that controller in his game, which I had never done before. I knew it was possible. I did not know how complicated it would be. Now, he brought that in, I think, on day two, or it might have even been on the first day, and we had a lot of stuff to cover, so we ended up not getting to it. Well, he and one of the other kids got together that evening, and they spent a couple hours messing around with it, and they actually figured out how to make that controller work for their games, which was just really cool to see. Now, as part of all of these games, there's two main aspects. One is learning the skills, learning how those games work. And then the second is to build them with your own creativity and add your own characters. One thing that I've always noticed over the years is that we would have one or two kids that was very interested in design or art, and they would have a sketchbook with them. And in their downtime, they would draw in their sketchbook. And this is not uncommon, especially when it comes to programmers. There's a lot of creativity and designers that get involved. But one of the things I thought this year is, what if we created a game that encouraged them to create their own characters? And so after thinking about it a lot, I came up with the idea of recreating Doodle Jump. Now, Doodle Jump was one of the very first games on the phones that used the accelerometer in order to know when you were tipping the phone left and right. And the doodle, the guy, the hero, as well as the platforms and the enemies were all doodles. They were just something that the guy had hand-drawn as part of the game. So that's where the doodle and Doodle Jump comes from. And your hero just jumps automatically. And all you can do is move the phone back and forth, and he would move back and forth, and you'd always go up. If you ever fell and you went down, then you would die and have to start over. But the whole point was, is how high up can you get on this game? So I thought that would be a real interesting game to have the kids explore their own characters and draw them on pen and paper or pencil and paper and scan them in and then bring their own characters to life. So early on in the week, we had them play the Doodle Jump game. And then on between Tuesday night and or between the end of class on Tuesday and then the start of it on Wednesday, we had the kids draw their own characters and then turned them into us. And then I went home and my son and I scanned them in and cut them up, removed the backgrounds. And then the next morning, actually it turned out to be Wednesday morning, we would then have those characters available for the kids to download. And then Wednesday morning, we would build Doodle Jump and they could build their own characters into the game. Had no idea if it was going to work or not. As most of my projects go, I don't really have any way of testing them. So we end up just putting them into the program and see how they go. Well, I would say this was a huge success this year, having kids build their own characters. We had a lot of them that were super into it. Some of them took their drawings home so they could spend more time on them, brought them back Wednesday morning, and we quickly scanned them in for them. And a lot of the kids went way beyond just the characters. They created different backgrounds, different language and words that would come up on the screen, like on a splash screen and a help screen. And then throughout the rest of the week, we had some kids that wanted to build more characters into other games that they were working on their own. And so we ended up scanning in a whole bunch of additional characters for kids. And it's not hard to do. And if you've never done it before, it may be intimidating. But I can actually scan in an image just using my cell phone and the camera, and then using GIMP, I can easily cut it, slice it, remove the background in just a couple of minutes, and then save those images out. And I have a website that I save them out to, so the kids can just go ahead and download them. But I would say this was a huge success this year, and I think I'd like to integrate more of those types of activities in. It really is that transition between the digital world and the real world. And I love to see that interaction. And that's where in Hack Sioux Falls, we saw a lot of that because we're dealing with physical things around electronics, but then also the software side. Well, anyway, part of our camps, one of the things that I also did early on, and this was a little bit by mistake, but it turned out to be just an amazing addition to the program. We, even though I have an office, we host almost all of our camps at a sponsor's location. This year, or actually for the last few years, we've been hosting them at Raven Industry, downtown Sioux Falls, and DocuTap, downtown Sioux Falls. And these both sponsors are great. They let us use their conference areas, very, very supportive, allow the kids to take a tour of the building each week. A lot of times they'll bring treats in if they've got treats. And it's just great to see the kids wandering around their offices. And I hear so many positive feedbacks from both of these businesses about us hosting them on site. And of course, the kids have a great time too, because they get to go to a business. And these are both really cool businesses. They've got really neat offices. One of the interesting things about DocuTap is that their development team has a whole bunch of dart guns, which is the foam darts. And they like to kind of have dart wars throughout the week. And the kids just blown away with this concept. I mean, they've never heard of such a thing, a business where you're going to shoot dart guns. They just think it's the coolest thing ever. And this year, the guy that was giving us the tour, James, one of the kids saw a dart on the floor and picked it up and said, "Hey, I found this dart." And James said, "Ah, you can have it." And the kids just thought that was so cool. It's like, "Well, you're going to let me keep this dart." So then throughout the rest of the tour, they were looking for darts. I think they ended up picking up 15 or 20 darts. And at the end, the kids were like, "Well, we found all these darts." And James was like, "Nah, you keep them. We've got thousands of them." And that just made these kids' day. But you think about it, here's a business where they're kids and they would think, "Oh, this is going to be boring tech company, boring. I'm going to sit in front of a computer all day." But it really isn't. There's a lot of culture that's been brought in. There's a lot of fun and activities. They get to see the kitchen area where they've got all kinds of free food. They can see the just the way that they interact with each other, you know, as part of it. The whiteboards all over the walls, the toys setting out in the common areas. And this is, you know, and it, as an adult as well, I mean, it's an interesting place to look or to work and to kind of see how that culture has kind of formed over the years. And both of these are very technical companies. If you're not familiar with them, Raven Industries, they build one of the things they do is these high altitude air balloons for Google to put satellites and Wi-Fis up in the higher altitude in remote areas. I mean, that's just one of the many things that they do. They do a lot of precision agriculture as well, where they have sensors and GPS auto-driving tractors, where they can apply the exact amount of fertilizer and seed in a field without any human intervention. So really innovative companies. DocuTap has been around for, I want to say it's been probably 15 years, and they build urgent care medical record systems. It all runs off of different tablets. In fact, they were one of the first to ever introduce a tablet in that industry. And so they have a long track record of being very innovative. But anyway, that has turned out to just be an amazing way to host these camps. And they feel ownership too. And they love to see the Facebook tweets, Facebook messages and tweets that we send out throughout the week. So anyway, that's our camp. This year I heard a lot of positive feedback. I always hear great feedback, but this year it seemed like it was a little bit over the top on things. I think we've really zeroed in on having that great experience. One of the things that I like to do is that Friday at the end of our camps, for that last hour, I do what we call a game showcase, and I invite parents to come in. And I also say, bring anybody, you know, bring siblings, bring your grandma and grandpa, bring whoever you want. Come in, take a look at what your son or daughter has done over the last 5 days and show the games off. Now, you got to keep in mind, we've built at this point between 6 and 7 video games. So it could take hours to show them all. And a lot of parents don't have that type of time or patience, but it's great to have the parents come in. We almost get we usually get about 100% attendance. There's usually 1 or 2 kids throughout the entire summer where just due to scheduling or whatever, their parents aren't able to come in. But most of the time, we get all the parents to come in, and they can spend as much time as they want. I say, I'll be here till the last parent has their last question asked. But anyway, that's just a great way to get the parents and grandparents and siblings involved to see what the kids have built. And if the kids have done some custom games, I think that's just another adding on top of that. We run these camps until about three in the afternoon. And I always have one or two kids in every single camp that just doesn't want to go at the end of the day. They'll either drag their feet or they just won't shut their laptops down. The parents have got to come in a way, kind of drag them out or haul them out, which is also just, I think, another interesting factor on how these kids are being engaged as part of our camps. The last thing I wanted to mention about our camps this summer was just the sign-up process. Now, over the years, I've just run everything through a regular event system. Parents can come in, they can essentially buy a ticket. As part of that process, then we kind of add them into an email stream, and I send out a bunch of messages as we lead into the camp. But a couple of things that are interesting that I've noticed over the years is it does seem like it's increasingly difficult to get the message out to people. People don't like to respond to Facebook ads or Facebook posts. I've got a relatively large email list at this point, but even that, while maybe less than half of the people sign up through our mailing list, the other half just seem to be, not quite half, but a good percentage of them just seem to be random searches on the internet looking for a camp. Now, as part of this summer, I usually start advertising 2 months in advance, and the advertising is all over the place, and I try different things every year. This year, do a lot of media outreach. I can usually get a couple of media stories either in the local newspaper or the local TV shows or morning programs about our gaming boot camps, which actually surprisingly doesn't get a ton of traction. I'll usually get a little bit, but it's not as much as people think it would be. I usually do some Facebook ads, but I usually get frustrated with them and delete them due to lack of engagement or just way too complex to create good ads. And I honestly haven't got a lot of follow through within the ads that have been run. This year, I did expand out and do radio ads through one of the local radio stations. While I'm sure it had some impact, I couldn't attribute one ticket sale through that radio ad itself. I'm not 100% sure I'm going to continue to do that. But it does look like the majority of the students that we get are just searching. Their parents are looking for this type of a program. Now, as they look, they're probably going to pick up on one or more of those media or Facebook ads or posts that we make. But I'm always surprised that you would think a program like this, even though I got posters all over the place and I'm talking about it constantly and posting it, it's really hard to get parents to engage and say, this is something that we want. Even though at the end of the program or even leading up to the program, I hear a lot of things about the parents say, this is exactly what the kids, wanted to do, or I can't believe how much fun they had, or they just wouldn't stop talking about it. So I know that our club or our camp is hitting the mark with the kids, but I just am not sure how to better get the word out there and engage. I'd love any feedback that anybody has, if anybody has any success in other areas. I think I've kind of tried everything under the sun, and it just doesn't seem like there's one main way to get the word out to the parents. But anyway, just like most years, our camps have sold out. This year, scheduling, I did have a couple last-minute open seats in our first one, but that was mostly due to the scheduling. Our first camp turned out to be the first open school or the open week after school ended within the Sioux Falls district. So that one was a little bit hard to get kids to sign up for, but even that, we had a almost full class. So a few takeaway lessons from this podcast. I think we do want to get more kids to get a deeper understanding of programming and coding. Our camp isn't just a play games camp. Although, honestly, I think I could sell a let's go get together and play video games all day camp. I don't think that would be a hard sell at all with games like Fortnite now, where you can get together and kind of cooperatively play. As part of each year, there just seems to be a online game that pops up that the kids either know about and are playing on their own that kind of gets integrated into some of our free time, like right after lunch. This year, it was a game called Moomoo.io. No idea. Last couple of years, it was a different game. But anyway, this is a game where you can get 10, 15 kids to all jump on the same game and cooperatively play the challenge. And this one seemed to be something to do with mining and building a fort and defending your fort. But that's just something that kids love to do, is to play video games. But where we really wanted to engage kids were not playing games, but to learn those skills of building games and to have a new appreciation for when they're playing things like Moomoo.io, of what the original author had to do to create that game. They understand how the sprites work. They understand how those engines work. They understand the amount of code that would have gone into each of those games. So that's a really interesting lesson I think the kids are learning as part of it. And the last thing I'll just leave you with here around lessons is I think we need to find cool ways to integrate both creativity in with technology. And as you've noticed through a lot of the projects and programs that I run, at every opportunity, I try to do more of integrating those two together. And our gaming bootcamp is, I think, a really good example of how you do that. Again, it's not just follow this very specific instruction, but it's here's the game we're going to build. And I want you to think of your own heroes, and I want you to think of your own enemies, and I want you to be creative on how you build that. And then, like I mentioned with our Doodle Jump game, here's how we're going to take that real world pen and paper with a little Sharpie at the end so we can see the lines very, very well, and integrate that specifically into a game that they're all familiar with. So I love that we're able to do that on more of them. And I think anywhere where we can try to combine those two worlds, the better off we're going to be. So with that, I want to thank everyone for joining today. If you haven't left a review over on Apple, we'd love it if you'd head over, give us a big 5 stars. And as always, you can join the conversation on our Facebook page. Just search for Go Hack Something. To subscribe to the podcast, if you head over to gohacksomething.com, you'll find all of the links, or you can just search for Go Hack Something wherever you get your podcasts. We should be listed everywhere. And with that, I want to say thanks and go hack something for yourself.